this third and final hour of the Hagmann Report on this Tuesday, December 12th, 2016. It's almost 2018. 2017. And we got Stan Deo coming up in just a few minutes. Want to bring you a quick word from Greenovative. As you know, Greenovative makes awesome portable power using salt water. Greenovative is offering their 30% store-wide discount that was supposed to end on December 5th until the end of December 15th due to Hagmann listeners asking them to extend the offer. So again, you have Greenovative 30% off their store-wide sales through the 15th of December. If you're looking for a great Christmas present, with lots of capability, now is the time to get one or two packages at an incredible savings. Also, don't forget they also still have their mission pack that you can send to your favorite missionary, your pastors, have them stored up in your church and ready to go. Greenovative.com is the website, and again, that's the 30% off discount extended sale until December 15th. And we want to thank Alan Riggs and Greenovative for being sponsors of the Hagmann Report. Quick election update from Alabama. It seems that we have a few more percent of the vote coming in, and Roy Moore has taken the lead. According to the New York Times poll, he is up by, looks like, almost 2%, 2.1%. So it's too early to call, but we will continue to update that as the time goes by. We know that this was going to be a close race, depending on the voter turnout, and because of all the publicity that it has received and the negative publicity that Roy Moore has received. So it's going to be a close race. I expect you won't have an answer at least for another hour, maybe two.
You know, again, the story obviously is going to be who the victor is. But the real story, I may address this tomorrow in my morning show, is going to be the spin by the media regardless. One thing that talking about spin, you know, that idiot from Bangladesh that strapped a candy cane on his chest.
Family says,
okay, what a moron. Now, think about this. Okay, here's what I'm talking about. The bomber from yesterday, the intended suicide bomber, the idiot from Bangladesh that walked, and we were in that very spot, by the way. I don't know if you remember, but we were in that very spot where that bomb went off. A number of years ago.
Yeah.
But having said that, the New York subway blast suspect, in a Facebook post before detonating bomb, wrote this: "Trump, you failed to protect your nation."
Yeah, he put that on a Facebook post before he went
okay.
out.
Okay. No, seriously? It's, hey, de Blasio. It's not Donald Trump. Donald Trump has been working overtime. Regardless of what you think, regardless of your political ideology, you cannot intellectually argue that it would be Donald Trump's fault. It's De Blasio. It's Cuomo.
De Blasio
it's their
stopped
fault.
A lot of the surveillance that was being done on mosques and the some of the counterterrorism units. He drew back on those. I think it was last year. Savage has been pointing that out.
And who took out all of the references to Islamic terrorism out of the FBI manuals? I'll give you three guesses. Robert Mueller. How's that? He's responsible for taking that out of the FBI training manuals and the manuals. Robert Mueller, that's right, the top cop, the A number one, the can't do anything wrong, special prosecutor. He's the guy responsible. And you got this Nimrod, this New York City bomber, saying, hey, it's Donald Trump's fault, you get him to protect your nation. And of course, this is what USA Today's reporting, and this is what the media spin is. You gotta be kidding me, alright? Seriously. What is wrong with our media? So I've got no problem with, and by the way, I got no problem with people saying fake news and what have you, but by the way, this has really been the worst year for the major mainstream media. Cry me a river. This is a reason for it. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, we have Stan Deo with us, and just real quick, one last thing on the New York City attempted terror attack. Did you see the reaction of the family? How they said today that they were highly outraged at the conduct of the law enforcement officials for making their four-year-old wait outside in the cold, and for having a person in, I think it was a high school, questioned without the parents there. and they were making a big deal out of that, having a lawyer from CARE.
Well, go back to Bangladesh. Go back to your Muslim country where you want your rights. Don't bring your crap over to this country. Get the hell out of our country.
And that, you know, begs the question, is should there be some kind of retaliation or response from the U.S. government to deter families of terrorists? Should they be blamed at all? Some say if you are here and one of your family members commits an act of terrorism, send the whole family back. Too much. But does something have to change? That's the question family. That needs to be asked.
The whole family, the extended family, their pet turtle, their pet goldfish, everything. Get them out. In fact, let me drive the bus. I'll drive the bus. I'd be driving the bus. All right.
Well, the question is, what, if anything, can be done to further deter this behavior from repeating? But with that, let's bring Stan Deo on.
Yeah.
I know you have ideas. Stan Deo is our guest each and every Tuesday in the third hour. Go to standeo.com and pull up the show images page just to the right of the microphone icon on the right-hand side of his page and follow along with all the research and findings that Stan presents on the show. Stan, it's great to have you back on.
Good to be here, guys. I have a number of things here that kind of pertain to the immigration and the terrorist type situation. I see that the in image 48 here, I have a link to an article on the Jewish News, and it says it's end of times. These eight places around the world are actively preparing for nuclear war. So it's not just the terrorists here in the United States. There are forms of them all over the world, and you know, North Korea could be considered a terrorist. Iran certainly has terrorists, but in the Middle East, the Palestinian supporters are all terrorists, whatever they call themselves, you know, Al-Nusra Front or ISIS or whatever. So the whole world is coming apart at the moment. Everybody's against everybody else. I know Holly put up an article today on the news page over at standeo.com about, in fact, I might have a link to part of that, about China. Yes, image 45. On the show images page, the Chinese are threatening World War III against the United States if we move our, you know, Navy and other forces over in the region where Taiwan is, and of course North Korea. I don't know why they've suddenly decided China to threaten us with World War III over that, because we've been coming and going and dealing with Taiwan, supplying them weapons for, you know, decades, and, you know, having trade with them in electronics and various other products they make. And of course, this thing with, North Korea, China should have been taking care of them, but they haven't. So it might be a long-term chess game with China to involve the United States in a confrontation over there in the Western Pacific region. And that could draw our major military resources over there instead of to the Middle East or to protect our home front. I know that our tacticians and strategists in the DOD here are all aware of this, but I tell you what, with several of our destroyer class ships being out of service at the moment due to collisions or other things that were wrong with their electronics, you got to wonder how safe we really are from, you know, invasion and attack.
Well, that's conspiracy talk, Stan. I mean, who would think? I mean, we're impervious to that. We've got two oceans, and yeah, you know, Stan, you make a good point. This is something we wouldn't have talked about 30 years ago, would we?
No. China wasn't that strong, but by golly, they're rising to the front now. We're losing that number one position very rapidly.
During the 90s, wasn't there a huge technological transfer to the Chinese from America?
Well, certainly there was during the Clinton administration. Yeah. If they even have a Chinese desk, or they did have in the patent office, and whether a patent got accepted or just applied for, the Chinese were taking it over there and doing what they wanted to with it. Yeah. Clinton has to wear a lot of the responsibility for what China has now.
In a statement on North Korea, we've never been safer. I think that was Clinton. Yeah, it was Clinton. Yeah, Bobby.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, you're right. And Standeo.com, go to his show images page there. And, wow, very interesting times.
Yeah. You know, just real quick, one last thought. For years and years, we've heard that, you know, the invasion possibility about Russia. And you know, we've heard that, you know, the Russian troops are training on U.S. soil and the counter military drills that they're doing with CIA and whatnot. And there seemed to be some integration between the Russia and U.S. military, especially, you know, during the Jade Helm period. But when you think of the population of China and the size of their military, and if they were to launch some kind of invasion, that would be a far different looking battle, I think, than if you had Russia coming and invading, that many people have had dreams and visions and state will happen. And if you have
that movie Red Dawn.
Yeah, and then if you have a combining of the two, you know, that's a lot of trouble we're getting into. So any talk like that is something we need to take a close look at, because the dangers are very real and the consequences would be catastrophic if that did happen.
Yeah, I mean, going back 20 years even, Russians, the Soviets, and the Chinese had a Sino-Soviet pact they signed, which may have gone by the wayside when the Soviet Union broke up, I don't know. But basically it said Russia and China joined together against their common enemy, the United States. I don't think that's gone away. Certainly, the saber rattling from the Chinese at the moment. The Russians are sitting on the northern Korean border, and I think the Russians and the Chinese are definitely in collusion against the United States. And as you say, so many people have had visions, dream visions, of a Russian, a Chinese, and even one Middle Eastern country joining them, invading the lower 48 United States, lower 48. Dmytro Dudeman, who has now passed away, saw this in dream visions the Lord gave him, and he even told where the Russian portion of the invasion would come from, and the Chinese, and the Hopi. Holly and I visited the Hopi Indians in the Shagopipi tribe, and we were privy to discussions of their prophecies in the home of one of the leaders of the community. And he said, like, okay, there will be a Russian Chinese and a Middle Eastern country to invade the United States, and it will be a horrible war. And then the invaders will eventually leave and go away, probably because they've destroyed most of the country. But the front range of the Rockies down into northern Arizona and New Mexico would probably be occupied by the Hopi and some Navajo and some of the survivors of the invasion. But this is getting very, very close, you have to admit.
I stumble at even asking this question. Can you see a condition, I suppose, or conditions that would permit such an invasion, or that would facilitate such an invasion? I mean, don't we have a formidable force to prevent such a thing? Or,
well, let's look at the new types of weapons that are out there to disable our electronics in the military, ships and aircraft and communications. Certainly they take a lot of precaution to try to eliminate that with the MP protection that they have on boats and aircraft and, you know, tanks and communication gear. But there's also a very focused type thing that Raytheon even invented probably 10 years ago, allowing a Tomahawk missile to come and target a particular building and zap it with a very concentrated pulse, electromagnetic pulse, in the microwave region, which would fry all the electronics in that building, but not anywhere else. Now those, because of the closeness of it, the intensity of it, and the frequency range, could be quite devastating, even over what the mil-spec for EMP shielding is for, you know, like buildings. If that happens, say, in the DOD, or if a nuke hits it, or if an offshore EMP is launched from somebody's international ship in international waters, that could start the chaos inside the country here. We are so dependent on electronics and communications throughout the United States and the world, but certainly here, that any interruption of that can create chaos in communications within our military. We can also expect civil war, you know, like isolated incidents between various ethnic or religious groups in the United States. We can see that. We've talked about it for several years on your program, that the Hopi said there would be this massive civil war that would weaken the United States from within, and that's when they'd be invaded. So the more you see about Democrat against Republican, you know, Trumpites, anti-Trumpites, black against white, against Puerto Ricans, Muslims against Jews, against Christians, you know, illegals against illegals in the country, these facets of the civil strife certainly lend credence to the Hopi prophecy that we would first be weakened by internal strife. And, you know, perhaps the deployment of troops, both state and federal, for some type of martial law to try to maintain order. But, you know, if you add to that communications blackouts or power, we've got a nightmare here.
Yeah, I agree. And I kind of think back to the original, what was that, Red Dawn scenario? The original Red Dawn. And I don't think I watched the other one, but yeah, it's just... Boy, that would, excuse the expression, that would suck.
And we've been over the statistics of the EMPs and what that would do to a civilized world. I mean, look at the hurricane that hit Puerto Rico. They still are without power in some areas down there. And think of how devastating the EMP would. And it's all the more reason to check out Standeo's EMP Shield. And you can check his website for that. And that's also in the show images. If you want more detailed information, he has them right under.
You make great Christmas gifts.
Yeah, and how to use them and what they are, how they work, it's all there. So check those out.
I wasn't going to address that too much this evening, guys, but obviously you've got a code you can tell people to use. But our problem at the moment is being able to keep up with the demand. So I'm putting temporary limits of how much stock we're allowing to be sold on the websites, because, you know, we just can't meet 10,000 orders a week. So as we get stock in of the various popular units, I put up on the shopping cart, okay, we'll let you have 500 or whatever. So you kind of have to hit it every day and be first come, first serve to get it. I will kind of tell you the bad news, but toward the end of January, we've already made arrangements with the our manufacturers and subcontractors, we will be able to probably turn out about 10,000 units a week, and we'll catch up.
It's a good problem to have, Stan.
And these are all American. This is all American made, right?
Oh, you bet. You bet. That's right. Made in Kansas, way out there in the boonies. But in fact, it's not far from where one of the missile sites, you know, the Atlas series
was. Irony.
Yeah, I know. Even one of the guys, like our project managers, done a lot of contract work for the nuclear reactors in the region there. And the parent company, CanSeal, they've been working on, you know, repairing and maintaining nuclear reactors like Wolf Creek for, you know, years now. So we've got really good guys behind us, and we're doing the best we can. I might also tell your listeners that in addition to an EMP shield, you need to have an auxiliary power supply. A number of people thought that an EMP shield was, you know, going to protect them and they wouldn't have any problems. It'll protect their stuff that's, you know, connected inside the house, but it won't make new energy for you. So you need diesel, you need wind, you need solar, and hopefully we'll be able to get the information out for our atmospheric converter. Our attorneys are looking at the stuff now then so we can file new patents on it.
Well, that just makes sense in a way, because that was my question. Your stuff is protected, but where are you going to get the juice from if everything else is fried? So,
yeah.
Okay.
You know, that's what started this whole thing. Tim and I were, you know, working on the aerials out the back of my place and over his place in Kansas and another one up in the Colorado Springs, and our groups were all looking at various problems we might have because we were using high voltage collectors. And, we thought, well, we need to have some kind of a protector, you know, for lightning strikes or surges nearby or surges on the antenna. And so I said to Tim, you know, back in early October, I said, look, design us some kind of a device that'll shield the high frequency, high voltage stuff that might affect our antenna. And he said, well, why don't we just make it for like an EMP strike? You know, and I thought, well, okay, investigate that and see how we do that. And so he ran off and he talked to a couple of his buddies there in the government, whatever, and came back with a design that was really quite novel, is quite novel.
Well, that's...
Excuse me.
No, that's...
Yeah, sorry, go on.
That's interesting, Stan. I want to ask you this, and I kind of want to switch gears because I'm looking at the time. We're already 20 minutes into this, and I know we got a lot to cover.
Right.
I see you have something up here on Netanyahu. Iran eyes sending 80,000 Shiite fighters to, and I got to pull this up to see where you're talking about.
Middle East.
Oh, Middle East.
Would you like to hum during this?
That threw me off there.
They're going into Syria, and I think some of them will probably migrate over into northern or southern Lebanon. That's why Lebanon's such an important pawn of the Saudis and the agreement with the Saudis and various other Arab nations with Israel. But Iran is behind all that, and certainly with Syria and Lebanon, you know, Lebanon adjoins Syria over on the Mediterranean coast, and then Syria comes down to the Golan Heights, which they still claim is theirs, but Israel occupies for safety. So, they're, you know, it's just a drive across a borderline with troops. And if you put 80,000 troops over there in Syria and slip some of them over into Lebanon, it's going to be a real danger to Israel. You know, and this is no news to Israel. They've been preparing for this for some time.
Well, I've seen a few stories in the last few days, Stan, and I have not been able to really independently verify some of these accounts. But one, the White House is, I read this, this is not confirmed, the White House is considering to accept Assad as the continued ruler of Syria, and also that there's a huge drawdown or a complete drawdown of Russian troops in Syria because they
say that
ISIS has been demolished. So you have seen that. Okay,
yeah.
So that might be a temporary confirmation. So if you have, you know, the U.S., who's not technically there, you know, pulling some of their people back, if you have Russia pulling their people back, what are we expecting to see with Iran sending people in there? Especially, say, if Assad is going to, you know, retain and re-announce his, you know, leadership to the world from over there, and it seems that the fighting is dying down. Is this to help the Syrian government, or is this for other purposes?
I tell you what, the more I investigate the various aspects of this Middle East situation, the more confused I get, because there are so many alleged alliances that may not work, may be a lie between various countries and religions over there, that I have no idea how it's going to play out. I do know that we are going to see, by prophecy, that, you know, the Russians and, you know, Gog Magog, they're going to be pulled down, jaws and hooks in their jaws to draw them down the Middle East. Is that going to be for oil? Is that going to be for alliances with Syria or, you know, Lebanon or Iran? That area is going to be erupting very shortly. It is going to be such a threat to the entire world when that starts down there or over there, that you can see why a peace treaty between Israel and many nations and the United States as well is going to be essential to try to give peace and security to the people of the world. Jordan is definitely against Israel at the moment. It hasn't really changed its spots on that. And Jordan is trying to act against the United States as far as kicking the embassy out because of the Trump decree to move our embassy down to Jerusalem from Tel Aviv. You know, the Egyptians are, you know, quasi-friendly, but, you know, relating to the 1994 peace treaty with Israel and stuff. So when you put all these things in your mind and roll them around, it leaves a lot of unanswered questions, uncertainties. And the only way to kind of solidify where things are going there is to watch the news every day. And the more you read, the more the situation comes into focus. But the main thing at the moment I see is the Middle East is waiting for a spark to use some nuclear weapons, somebody over there against each other. Both sides have them. Israel has them. Iran has them. Pakistan has them. So the Saudis have it. And I don't know what the arrangement between the Saudis and the American government is about weapons, whether they're going to be secretly having nukes or not. But that area over there, because of like desert areas and sparsely populated areas, there could be nuclear detonations. It wouldn't be as catastrophic as they would be in Europe or the United States in the populated areas.
You said because of their deserts?
Yeah. There are vast areas where there's nobody there. And if they had, you know, like, armies fighting each other, the nukes could be tactical nukes and be like limited range and not EMPing the surrounding countries. So I'm saying that a nuclear exchange could be allowed over there by the powers of the world, and then force a treaty to be signed. But it won't protect the United States. Somewhere in all that, the United States will have to fall. As we support Israel under this current administration, and when you have the liberal democratic administrations, you know that support for Israel is almost zero. So during a conservative Republican type government of the United States where we are supporting Israel with weapons and backup troops and whatever and money, and the alliance of peace between them and the Saudis and the other Arab nations in that consortium, because of that, the United States is viewed by Russia and China as, well, the great Satan that needs to be destroyed. They need to weaken us to the point that we can't help Israel. We can't even help ourselves. So I'm thinking that very soon America is going to get hit right around the time that the nukes fly in the Middle East.
It's a crazy situation, Stan. And
painting a very disconcerting picture.
And it could go a number of ways. And one of the interesting things that we covered today, that we saw today, is Chris Matthews, and the media in general has been having your usual reaction to Donald Trump, but he equated Trump's recognizing Jerusalem as the capital of Israel as the same as getting America into a stupid war. And he said that not only did Trump keep a campaign promise by recognizing Jerusalem, but he also broke one, saying he wouldn't get us into stupid wars, equating that this decision is equivalent to entangling us in a war. But it just, it has seemed to change the allegiance, or at least it initially appeared so, of some of the nations like Jordan, for instance, expressing their anger over the decision. But do you think that the Arab alliance that you talked about will be able to continue, or do you think that this announcement somehow will have an effect on that?
I think it's already had an effect with some of the member nations of the Saudi alliance over the decision to the United States to move the embassy to Jerusalem. It impacts the potential Palestinian-Israeli peace treaty negotiations, and so I think that the Arabic Union will lose some of the 41 member states, but I don't think they'll lose enough of them as I've said on the show before, I listed how many thousands, tens of thousands of tanks and attack helicopters and troops and stuff that the alliance has. So they can stand to lose, 25% of it, still be a formidable force against whoever they want to be, Iran or the United States. I don't trust the Saudis who are in charge of all this. I no matter how they have shaken hands and treated the Trump administration and the representatives of the administration over in the Middle East, I can't put 2,500 years of angst or, controversy between Israel and the Saudis away in a handshake with young Prince Salman and King Salman, his father. They just don't change their spot that quick. By the way, one of the mascots of the Arabian continent there are leopards, so changing their spots is a very apropos type.
I see what you did there.
Yes.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Man. You look at this, in my view, you look at everything that's going on with a wide lens. Man, where do you even start?
I know. The more we talk about it, the more confusing it seems. But in the end, the final blueprint that you trust is the one from the Bible.
That's true.
Telling the lineup of nations against whom. And Israel still remains the focus of all this. Such a tiny nation, mm-hmm. and such a gathering of large nations against it. It's like from Spartacus, you know, with your pitchforks trying to fight the Roman army, but they are there and they're going to win, but not before there's a lot of hurt between here and there.
And that's very true. And I think that's a good point too. We have to remember God is in control. I think we have to remember that our guidebook is the Holy Bible, you know.
Yeah. The Israelis, you know, they're brilliant. They're making advances in medicine and technology and power and fresh water production that are just wonderbar. And plus, they've got the gas fields in the Mediterranean, and soon their oil fields in the Megiddo Valley will be developed. I know in the last week, the share prices of Zion Oil, which is in the southern part of Megiddo, where they have 99,000 acres of, you know, to drill, and a 2-year lease, which is exceptional. They are very close to approving the oil fields of the Megiddo. And, you know, their shares have jumped 8% in a week, which tells you that there are a lot of private concerns that know what's going on there. And I'm pretty sure they'll find oil there, and also to the west and north of there, the Megiddo Plain up near Nazareth. But anyway,
that'll be the currency of, or that'll be the what they're going after, or what they would go after. In other words, the spoils, I guess, is what I was looking for.
Yeah, the spoils. Yeah. And it's not just to be greedy; it's to be, you know, keeping countries energized. We depend on fossil fuels immensely, and then like in Russia and China. Some of the Siberian oil from Russia is heavily waxed. You know, it's hard to refine, very expensive. So they want this nice, clean, not too paraffiny type oil down the Middle East. And for years, we've suspected there was a deep reservoir in Israel. And in fact, I tracked it down, plotted it using some of my dad's information, because he was a petroleum geologist years ago. And if you look at slide 4 on my show images page, it shows you a lot about how I traced the underground oil fields that they haven't yet tapped, but they're doing it right now on the end closest to the Sea of Galilee with the Zion oil well. I'm just trying to see which one of these. Remember, the Bible talked about the flinty stone that, you know, and the oil in Israel, and they thought that this was just like olive oil and you know, flinty stone being the kind of ground that the olive trees grew on, and it might well be that. But I went to Israel's geological sites and to the universities there and asked questions and got copies of things to see where in all of Israel was this flinty stone like basanite found. And I found two little locations, and they're both in the Negev, and they are right close to Kfar Yehoshua, which is just a stone's throw from Haifa. But you can see that if you go to my slide 4 and into the pages there and look at the second row from the bottom, the first image, overview of the area. And you can see the little red outline where I found the only places that they have record of in Israel where there is flinty stone. It's called basanite. And then I tracked the underground aquifers, the underground flows from the Golan Heights where they have proven oil. And I found the blue track that I have there. I have two of them. One goes over into closer to Haifa, and the other one goes right here to this flinty stone area where these two red outlines are. I don't know whether you can see that. Yeah, there you go. You see those two yellow pins there. And, you know, south, if you look at southwest or kind of diagonal toward the Google Earth sign, down that way just about 5 or 10 miles, not that far even, is where Zion Oil is drilling, where they've been given permission to drill. And to the upper left of that, there's an orange pin. You see that there, and it's Elroy Petroleum Storage Facility. They've got huge petroleum storage tanks there. So I'm telling you, they've got oil there that either they know about it and haven't drilled yet, or have done so and are keeping it very quiet. There's always been the threat from the Arab oil exporter nations that if Israel tries to develop oil from deep wells, that, that the Arabs are going to instantly declare war because they say Israel will be taking oil running downhill from the Arab supplies that we've been using.
And wouldn't it work both ways, Stan? Because I know you talked about this on our show. One of the past shows you did, you gave a great presentation on this. But wouldn't that work both ways? Then wouldn't, if they're taking oil out of those wells and it's dry, wouldn't it also dry up? If they're that connected, if Israel taking oil out of a well depletes wells, where other nations drill, doesn't that say that these underneath these oil wells are obviously?
Oh, yeah, and not only that, the lower oil fields, which might be 20 to 25,000 feet deep in Israel, the Megiddo, those wells, the Arabs say, okay, you'll be sucking oil out of our wells, which are at a higher altitude over on the Saudi Peninsula. But the truth is, those oil wells are under terrific pressure, 25,000 feet down, and that pressure is pushing the oil uphill, has been since the formation of it, into the Arab country. So what they've been doing is taking the oil off the top of the field that's been pushed up in their direction from the Israeli pool of oil. Now, if you've been following the Saudis and a couple of the Arab nations that are exporting oil, they're kind of slowing down. And there's strong evidence in Wall Street that the Saudi oil fields are like 25% of what they officially declared as their oil reserves are running low on oil. So that means that they've been taking the skim off of that, the pressure's dropping, and, they're not getting the oil that they used to from the Israeli oil field. So, yeah, it works really one way. The oil belongs to Israel, but it's been shoved up into neighboring countries. So when they run out of the fringe they've been picking from the top of this pushed up oil from Israel, they better find a way to support tourism or, minerals development or something like the Saudi prince is doing, because they're going to run out of oil to sell. And that's making this area very, very important. Very important. So yeah. Keep an eye on Zion Oil shares. I'm sure that they're in the right area. And
this is prophetic also. Scriptures definitely deal with this too. So we know that at some point this is going to happen. And also, Stan, I don't know if this is on your show images page number 44, if this is the same headlines I saw earlier that said after the Jerusalem decision, calls renew for a third temple. And I see that's what this article pertains to. Is that outside of this right-wing group, or are there other groups calling for another temple mount and a third temple?
Well, if you look at this is the Jerusalem Post, which, you call them right-wing if you want, but what they are very orthodox in that they want to reestablish the Temple of Solomon, because that means their Messiah, their view of the Messiah, can come. They have to have it ready for him. This is an interesting situation, because as Bob Kornicki and some others who have researched the location of the temple have said for, maybe 20 years at least, is that what we think the Temple Mount is, or was for Herod's temple, is not. At most, the corner where the Al-Aqsa Mosque is, in these, it's kind of on the east side of the Wailing Wall, where that is, there could have been a portion of Herod's temple there that was then overbuilt and joined into the Temple Mount that we know today. But outside the wall, on the southern part of the wall, in the district called Ophel, O-P-H-E-L, it is reasonably certain that the city of David was there, and to the right of that, or to the east of that, sorry, was the location of Solomon's temple, and it was close to the only spring in the area the Ophel spring that they needed for temple worship. So it had to be in that area, and I think a solution to this building the third temple would be, don't build it up on the Temple Mount, build it over where the city of David was. It's got some streets and houses and rubble piles on it now because no stone was left on, you know, unturned and thrown over when the Romans got a hold of it. And the Temple Mount itself does not represent what Jesus said would happen to the temple of Herod, even that it would all be torn down. No stone would be left, you know, standing. The Temple Mount, the stones are there, the foundations are there, and that was really where the Roman soldiers put their encampment to watch over Jerusalem, keep peace, you know, their way. And so I think that really a lot of attention should be focused on the research that's been put up on the internet about the true location of the city of David and the Solomon's Temple, which is kind of just slightly east of it, a few hundred feet. I think I have, let me just see, I think I have a link to something about that. Image 49 up the top. That's a video, and the guy speaks with a heavy accent, but he's telling about the research to find the, I better stop that, it's fixing the play. It tells about the research he's done, built upon others' research, to show where Solomon's Temple was. That's in the green outline you can see in that icon I've got up there. And it's worth listening to him and seeing why he thinks the Temple of Solomon could be built there. And that would stop a lot of the problems as far as Israel having a temple and not being on the actual Temple Mount that everybody thinks is where it belongs. To give you an example, when you go to Israel and you go to visit King David's tomb, King David's not there. It's an empty tomb. The Crusaders built that because they figured, well, this is probably where he was. We'll King David's empty tomb here as an artifact.
Hmm. So it's kind of like the progressive ballot boxes. Not never. All right.
Yeah. I don't know how Moore is doing now. He's been ahead and behind. Let me just ask, Holly, what's this? 53 Moore, Jones is 45.6 at the moment.
Well, yeah, you got 361,000 votes for Moore, 310,000 for Jones.
And CNN is now calling Judge Roy Moore a racist and a Russian. So,
well, they'll circle back around to pedophile sooner or later. And they still have a lot more weapons in their arsenal of name calling.
And the GOP establishment, they're meeting tomorrow to decide what to do if Moore wins.
I believe at this point, it looks like he has a commanding lead. It's not over yet, obviously, but better than what they expected of him. If you're listening to the media, and you know, this means that tomorrow morning, you talk about watching the news for their entertainment value. Tomorrow morning.
Oh, heads are going to just explode. I got to
sound clips galore.
I got to watch Mika and Morning Joe just for the entertainment value of that.
If they can even contain themselves enough to do a broadcast.
I wonder what it would take to. I'm not going to go there. I get in trouble. But anyway.
Yeah, I know. They say that they were predicting that the race would be so close that it might be a tenth of a percent between them. But at the moment, that's kind of gone by the wayside. So I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it's I don't like doing the football thing. You know, it's this and that and the numbers and stuff because I just don't trust how they bring in the numbers. I sense that there's a lot of Democratic or a lot of blue areas that are sandbagging the results. I don't know, but that's just me. But I just don't trust the score keeping up until
the
final moment.
When they declare so openly like they did in the presidential thing that their side's going to win, if it does go against them, as you say, it's going to be a storm of interesting comments on the news.
Oh yeah, it will be. It'll be something else. And
I go back to those videos after Donald Trump won, you know, you better fix this right now.
Oh, it's sad. But you see that shows the division in our population.
Yeah.
We are such a house divided we can't stand. We're going to be in trouble. We are in trouble.
Yeah, we are. And I ponder this. what brought us to this point, Stan? I mean, you and I, we're not that different and far apart in age, although you're about 100 years older than I am.
Yeah, approximately.
Yeah, but no, I mean, we're pretty close. You look better than me. Seriously, how did we get here? Yeah, how did we get here? In this, in the divisiveness.
Well, a couple of things are influences of this. People tend to forget the good Lord and honoring Him and our Messiah, Yeshua, Jesus. When things get to be really comfortable and you got plenty of money and plenty of spare time, you get slack and you let things happen that turn your nation and yourself even against God because you're on the fence or not supporting and doing things that would, spread the gospel. But my dad, when he came back from World War II, as I put on my website there on Stan's Corner about my dad and the Operation Tehran that he headed up with the British and the American soldiers that stayed after the war as civilians, they were blocking the Russians getting into the Middle East oil fields and taking them over because the White House at that time was wanting to just let the Russians do what they want to do. Dad, and his men, they supported, what's his name? The general that was killed over there, Patton. Patton wanted to just go right on into Russia and take them then because he knew they were going to be a problem. So Dad supported, stopping the Russians by bluffing them, thinking the American presence was there, even though they were just civilians with uniforms that looked American. Okay, so he comes home. And, I was born while he was away. And, when I grew up to, early teens, he started explaining things to me about the, communist plan to go into countries they want to take over, particularly the United States, to infiltrate the educational facilities, to compromise leadership, in scandals and whatever ways, to weaken the United States over one or two generations to the point that they would accept communism because they wouldn't know any better. It would come under the guise of socialism, and of course, certainly we have a lot of that now. So Dad educated me to this, and when the fifth columnists, as we call them, came into our religious universities and started altering the thinking of our new priests and ministers coming out to teach and to shepherd our, the Christian nation here. When they went into our educational facilities, into the, lower school, into the universities, and started bending people's minds, whether it be with drugs or, we want free will, all of that kind of stuff played into the weakness of the human spirit. And so we became slack, and we, as a nation, we saw that, people started to deviate from righteousness in all kinds of thought and deed. And that's, I think, what brought us down, is that we weren't good watchmen, or we couldn't get enough traction, because Dad certainly tried, and so did the John Birch Society, and so did, a number of leading individuals at the time, one general, and who was part of our group, all tried to wake up the American population, but they had just come out of World War II, and it kind of won the war. And, they didn't want to talk bad guys and war anymore. They just wanted peace and security and Christmas. And we let our guard down. We couldn't get the nation to rally.
I was surprised, Stan, to read about it. And I often talk about the book American Betrayal by Diana West. And I often talk about that book because in it, and I had no idea, that during the war, obviously, we sent military supplies to Russia, the Soviet Russia. And post-World War II, we continued that, via the Lend-Lease program, even to the extent post-atomic era, we were sending them uranium at one point via the Lend-Lease program, which just blew my mind, because it's kind of, passes prologue kind of thing, but I just, but I agree with you. I think you're 100% right on the money. We let our guard down. A lot of things happened during that time period.
I know my dad, years later, after the assassination of Kennedy and things like that, he just would shake his head because why weren't people listening? Why weren't people aware and awake? And control of the media and the educational facilities and our political systems and some of the banking facilities, it just is such a big thing to beat that he realized that we couldn't turn it around.
Yep. And the, and I would contend and agree with you that, the lack of scripture, taking the Bible out, ripping the Bible out of, the schools and really thumbing our noses at the Bible and the God of the Bible really are undoing. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. We're done. We're going to see a nation that is judged heavily for this.
Yeah.
And, you know, it wouldn't be for lack of trying for a lot of us, like yourself and me and many others and my dad and his groups. You know, they tried. And, it just is a nation of people that didn't want to listen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're exactly right. And it does give one pause to cause, I think, or cause to pause. whatever. But it makes one think about really how far we've gone in swirling the drain. But you know, I have hope that at least we can, maybe we can a percentage of the people out there and change their hearts, their minds. Otherwise, we wouldn't be doing this, right? I mean.
Yep. Hold on just a second. What was that update, Holly, on? Oh dear, Jones 59 and more 40.3. So the trend has reversed rapidly.
Where's she seeing that at, Stan?
What are you? What site are you seeing it on? Live New York Times.
I'm there too. I see Roy Moore at 51.6, Doug Jones at 47.
That's what I'm
seeing.
Have
you refreshed your screen?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm seeing 51.8, 46.8.
51
in favor of Moore, yeah. That's what we're seeing right now.
Yeah, Holly just updated ours. Yeah, same thing, same figure.
Okay.
It's
And that's what makes it tough.
72% reporting.
It's difficult to follow this because it changes.
Each site's different, too.
Yeah.
There's an Axios poll that has different numbers, and they're not the same as this. And then the margin's different and everything. But and one thing about the New York Times, I don't know if Holly or Stan, if you guys seen this, but underneath the number results, they have live estimates.
Yeah.
And ever since this started, you know, I've seen they've been predicting Jones to win, chance of winning 90%. Even right now, the chance of Jones winning, they say, is at 70%, with over 70% of the votes in and Roy leading by over 5 percentage points. So I don't know. I don't know where they get their... I think it's skewed and bias plays into those live estimates. It's what they hope they're going to, you know, probably the best possible outcome for Jones.
Yeah,
is what they put.
Follow the money, though. That's one thing that I really think where the story is. If you look at the support, I think by following the money into the Jones campaign, who's because you talk about a full court press against Roy Moore. Regardless, I mean, just put aside any issues. Just look at the tactics and the money. Holy moly, it's something. But wow.
Yeah, they're throwing money at it, and there's just no honor in what they're doing. But anyway.
No.
Hey, another lighter subject here, but a really good thing. Slide 47. I have a link to a story about Israel and the medical research. They have been doing field tests already of a vaccine that a company has developed, which blocks 90% of cancer types. Now, it doesn't prevent cancer in the beginning unless you catch it in the early stages. And this vaccine goes into your body, into your immune system, and it teaches your immune system how to get through the disguise that cancer cells normally coat themselves with so that the body immune system can get can kill them. And if you've had cancer and you've gone into remission and you want to stay that way, you can take this vaccine and it prevents the cancer coming back. So, you know, the tests have been, mainly breast cancer and some other stuff they're doing now, but, it is very encouraging to realize that they are teaching our bodies to be the treatment. So you have one shot and that's it. And it teaches your body to fight off these cancer cells. And as they develop more stuff, I'm sure it'll be good. Right above that slide, it's slide 50. Israel has, just put up its own space lab, which has a couple of Swiss projects, Israeli, and a couple of U.S. projects on it. and it docked with the International Space Station, so that it'll be an ongoing laboratory as part of the International Space Station. And they're doing mainly, you know, biological research up there. As I said, the Israelis are just very advanced in, you know, biology and genetics and you know, medicine. So it's worth having a look at that article. Or both of them, for that matter.
Israel doing a lot. That just tells me that. Wow.
And what do you think about Trump?
Look at how many Nobel Prize winners are Jewish, have been, you know. It's disproportionate to the entire population of the planet. There's a reason for that.
I was going to say the Middle East, but yeah, the planet, indeed. Yeah, you're right.
Stan, did you see Trump say that he wanted to do another NASA moon mission?
Yeah.
Do you think that that's something that he'll do?
Well, I know the vice president in charge of that,
The reason I asked it like that is because they talked about, for the first time, recycling an old ship or using an old rocket instead of building a new one. And they said that they believe that the risks are just the same as building a new one, because we know that NASA's really shut down any ongoing or further building of space shuttles. So I think it'd be interesting to see if they did try to do that.
You know, I have my own thoughts about that anyway, having worked mm-hmm. under the Teller Group, where we had anti-gravity and flying saucer technology and dealt with real aliens, in the 1960s.
Yeah.
So I don't think, if the president is read into what's happening with our, you know, relationship with these beings and the advanced technology, I would think that he might gain some political advantage by saying, yeah, we're gonna do a base on the moon and, you know, move that direction, but not spend a lot of money with new technology, because why? There's going to be an announcement here, you know, fairly shortly, when the world is at the edge of nuclear destruction, to, you know, to allow these quote-unquote aliens, you know, which is under Satan, you know, to come to the Earth and bring us peace and, you know, appoint a world leader. We're at that point, so I don't think that President Trump is going to be spending real money on this, you know, a little bit, but I don't think it's going to be a huge budget.
Okay.
Wow.
I just thought that was an interesting announcement, to hear him say that, and I didn't know if he said it just as a tongue-in-cheek thing or if he really meant it as something he wanted to do. But either
I saw the press conference, and he seemed to be, you know, serious about it, so okay. Who knows.
Interesting.
Hey, listen, we've got Gemini Shower coming tomorrow. We've already seen little pieces of the Geminids over Colorado. Holly and I were out here the last couple of nights, and some really impressive meteor fireballs have been coming down there. They come in, and it starts as a streak, and you can see that there. That's over India in 2015, but they come as a white streak, and then they start to glow bright green as it ionizes the oxygen. And the bluish tinge is from some of the nitrogen in the atmosphere being ionized as well. But anyway, it just kind of slowed down into this great green ball, and with smoke trailing behind it as it slowed down, and then poof, gone. But these things were tiny. They were like this in this picture. They were big. So I'm encouraging people to get out, you know, in the nighttime, even now, and look for these things. Ours came just overhead heading east.
Put your bicycle helmets on and go outside.
You know, we'll go out and see if we can see them, Stan. We just have to look through the blizzard and lake effect snow.
That's right.
But,
really?
I saw that shower was ongoing tonight and tomorrow. So thanks for the info on that. Stan, we are at the very end of the hour. Want to thank you so much for coming on, and thank Holly.
You be the man.
We will talk with you next Tuesday.
Thank you guys. Night night now.
God bless. Thank you.
Thanks, Stan.
Bye bye.
Well.
That'll wrap up this show.
Catch the Doug Hagman Raiders show tomorrow at 9 on Blog Talk Radio, and also Global Star, Joe and John, noon. Back here tomorrow night at 7. God bless.